Welcome to Lesson 2. Lesson 2, Bitcoin and Economics, is a lecture series by J.W. Weatherman, where he covers basic topics of trading, investing, and speculation. The lectures continue to help you understand what money is and what forms of money have existed now and in the past. He continues with deeper dives into speculation and finishes up with the topic of why Bitcoin. Lesson 2 has been broken up into 6 parts to make it more manageable. Part A is Foundational Concepts to Understand Investing, Trading, and Speculation. If you prefer the video format of these lectures, check out the link on the show notes page or head to 10hoursofbitcoin.com. You can find our Twitter handles there if you want to hit us up with any questions or suggestions, and we'd love for you to donate to the project. Finally, remember to share and subscribe to this podcast to help us reach as many people as possible.
Hey guys, so the goal for this course is basically represented in this crazy diagram. Let's start at the top. So you have a home, you have a life, you have a family, you have things that you care about. Chances are that you've built those things with your own labor. And if you were going to get involved with cryptocurrency investing or trading, there's some foundational things that you really have to understand in order to keep your house from cracking apart and ending up in one or the other den of lions or vipers. So we're going to spend a lot of time talking through all these different concepts, but I just want to give you kind of an overview of what I'm talking about and what I want to accomplish. So prices is an economic phenomenon. If you have a really good grasp of prices, then you can begin to understand speculation and money. Money can be understood in the same way that any other economic truth can be understood. It can be understood by definition, right? So we don't have to do a bunch of experiments together on any of the topics that we're going to talk about. It's as if I'm teaching you math, right? I'm going to say that by definition, the number 2 means this. And the definition of the word plus means this. So if I say 2 plus 2, then I can tell you that by definition, that equals 4. It's going to be the same sort of approach here. Anything that I say on economic truth should be self-evident, or at least based on a very logical, clear train of thought that goes back to very basic fundamental assumptions. What happens if you misunderstand speculation? Well, if you don't really understand what speculation is and how it works, you're going to have a tendency to do investments into things like mutual funds or try to find things that offer passive income, do the traditional 401k or try to do rental property, you know, the rich dad, poor dad stuff, or try to diversify when you do investments. All of those things will destroy your wealth. They're all terrible ideas. Obviously, if there's a little bit more nuance, and we're going to go through that, right? There are circumstances in which rental property in and of itself is not a bad thing. But most people that are getting involved in rental property are doing it because they don't understand what speculation is and how it works. And so they expect to have some wins that are just not possible. If you misunderstand money, especially if you're coming into the cryptocurrency space, and even in general, you've only got a few different ways that you're going to end up failing if you misunderstand money. One is being heavily invested in government fiat. And actually, you'll see through the course that we have a bunch of bad options available to us if we're not trying to invest. And actually, government fiat is one of the best that are available to us, depending on the country that we live in. And depending on how much has been printed lately and some other factors, government fiat, it will destroy your wealth, but it will destroy your wealth slower than all of the other things on this page. The other things that are over here, if you misunderstand money, is you might end up invested in any of these stupid altcoins, right? EOS, Tron, Ethereum, Monero, Litecoin, the list goes on. But if you really understand what money is, you're probably not. And in fact, I've yet to see one person that is a fan of any of these currencies that understands what money is at a reasonable level from an economic standpoint. Other goals for the course. I want you to be more human, and that might sound a little crazy, but there's an aspect of decisions or of thinking that is more animal-like, and there's an aspect that's less animal-like. So it is possible to be more, like we talk about this as people all the time, like it's possible to just make animal-based decisions, right? It's possible to make investment decisions based on instinct, for example. That's something that I want you guys to move away from and be encouraged to move away from and move towards something that is more reasoned and well thought out and measured. And, you know, this might seem like common sense, but almost everything that any economist has ever said that had any value was common sense, right? A lot of this is, you know, folk wisdom that your grandma might have taught you 100 years ago. But after enough government indoctrination, some of this stuff might seem a little controversial. So I have no problem with the idea that some of this stuff is obvious, since everything in economics is obvious once you understand it. So superstition, the opposite of superstition, and we'll talk about this when we talk about technical analysis, but it's really not a focus of the course, but it's a good way to illustrate it. Superstition is the idea that I don't care why it works, it just works. When I walk around with a dowsing rod, if I get a tingling feeling in my hand, I know there's water there. I don't understand what the mechanism is. I might call it energy, but I don't really mean electrons because it's a superstition, right? Whether it works or not, I have very little interest in the mechanism behind it. That is something that I want to encourage you guys to move away from in your investing and move towards really seeking to understand the mechanism of whatever is happening. Another way of looking at this is unconscious versus conscious, right? It's been argued that, and somewhat convincingly, in my understanding, that young children and animals are unconscious. They don't remember because they're not conscious, and they're not really awake in the way that adult clear thinking people are awake. I believe that you can become more conscious, right? You can learn more, you can be more systematic and clear in your thinking, right? Unconscious would be sort of like you have a bunch of disconnected ideas, right? You have this idea and it obviously conflicts with this other idea, but you're fine with that. That's not very conscious, right? It's like an animal. But what I want to encourage you guys to do is be more systematic, and show you the value of systematic thinking as we go through this course, right? It used to be that if you felt like you had a mastery of a subject, you wrote a treatise, and a treatise was supposed to be a systematic exposition of everything related to the topic, starting with basic principles and working all the way up. Very few people today have ever read a treatise on economics or theology or anything else for that matter. And that is, that's unfortunate, because you're not going to be able to be clear thinking, and you're not going to be able to find the flaws in your thinking unless you're systematic in your approach. Another way to look at this is magic versus technology, right? The dowsing rod is magic. We don't want to do that. We want to understand the mechanism. We want to understand how electrons work. We want to be able to understand that it's technology, right? It's manipulating the universe in an expected way to get expected output. And this also relates to being focused on the cause more, right? If you look at investors or people in general, you'll see a lot of people that are very, very focused on the effect. I did X, Y, and Z, but look what happened. This is what I got. It's amazing, right? Look at these incredible results. And then you'll see another group of investors that are less concerned with the effect, right? And that might seem to be a bold statement, because we're all in this to make money. But their time preference is such that they would rather understand the mechanism. They'd rather understand the cause than get the right result. They're not going into a casino and pulling the lever and disinterested in how the mechanism works. They are focused on the cause because they know that over time, and they usually have a very long time horizon, that if they understand how the universe works and why it does the things that it does, that they'll be able to get what they want out of it. So those are some of the goals for the course are to encourage that sort of thinking. Also, I just have some examples here, right? So these are some things that you're going to hear from people that are a little bit more on the instinct animal thinking side and less on the clear systematic thinking side. It's just got to work, right? This is something that you're going to hear from people in any investment space. It's just got to work. And that level of like frustration and desperation, it's almost as if they think that their time is due, right? Like they've gambled enough time. They're finally going to hit a winning streak. You can like feel that emanating out of these people. Or you'll hear people say the price just popped 20%. So this is obviously an incredible value, right? It makes no sense, right? There's all kinds of reasons that the price could pop 20%, including, you know, some market manipulation, or just a really good PR campaign. But when you're operating at the brainstem level, you look at things like this and you think they mean something in and of themselves, right? Or real simple phrases like Bitcoin is the MySpace and Ethereum is, you know, Facebook, like as if that sentence has a ton of context and clear thinking and value. It doesn't, right? Or, you know, Tim Draper said that I should be invested in Tron or whatever it was that he came out with. That sort of just disconnected appeal to authority, right? If this guy said it, it's a good idea, it must be good. Once you understand speculation, you're going to understand that these things are just like completely irrational, right? Like appealing to Tim Draper's authority on an investment decision is contradictory, right? Or just the sort of emotional attitude of, I can't believe you would say something like that, right? You're going to, if you get involved in cryptocurrencies, there's a lot of emotional folks or any investment, right? Angel investing, you're going to hear people that get really upset when you share a contrary view. And that is, I mean, think about what that expresses. I can't believe you would say something like that. That is a completely different attitude than we want to have, because what we want is to understand how all of these really complicated things work. And if somebody has an opposing view, there's opportunity there, right? But it's almost like sort of a religious thing, right? There is an element in these people that's a superstitious sort of thing as well, where if other people say or think that your investment is a bad idea, it's going to affect the outcome, right? It's like getting jinxed. And we want to move away from that to things like, well, I've spent a few months reading on this and I think, right, there's a humility there. And also a certain amount of work that has been involved. Or, you know, I don't know how this is going to turn out, but I'm definitely going to learn something from the experience, right? It's that time preference. I want to know the mechanism far more than I want to have the outcome of getting a 200% gain. Things like, this is my current understanding, but, you know, that's always a good sign too, right? That humility and that sort of scientific attitude, right? Like, this is my model of the natural world. And if it breaks, that's fine, because I'll know that I didn't know what I was doing and I'll have to build a new model. Stuff like, I'm correct about this part, but, you know, and this is something that hopefully you'll hear from me a little bit in this course. When it comes to the economics, I'm correct. And I'm right. And I'm as confident about that as I am with 2 + 2 = 4. Now, when we start applying that to actually picking cryptocurrencies to invest in, that's where things, you know, hopefully you'll feel a change in confidence level in me, right? Because there is a difference between being able to say something that's an economic truth, like if the price goes down, all other things being equal, consumption will go up, which might sound profound and, you know, people will certainly argue with me about that. But there's a difference between saying that and you should invest in Monero, right? There's a different level of confidence that should be present. Now, with all that in mind, I wanted to kind of just give you guys a preview of a slide that we might come back to, and that is how to create wealth. The reason that this is important, especially at this stage of sort of the talk, is that if you have this in the back of your mind, that there's all kinds of different ways that you can become wealthy. And to a degree, there is a progression, right? If you have built a product business, all other things being equal, you're going to make a lot more money than if you've built if you're providing hard to learn labor services, right? Now, this is in that category of stuff that I would say is not economic truth. Maybe I'll try to try to call that out as much as possible. This understanding of how things work is based on my entrepreneurial experience, right? Working with a lot of people and starting a few businesses, some of which have been successful, some of which haven't. But I do think that this does represent some systematic thinking. So let me walk you through this. So the cheapest, sort of the hardest way, let's say, that you can create wealth is to be a self-centered laborer, right? To have, to be the kind of person that is really focused on your own wants and needs and not focused on others, right? So you're the guy that shows up to McDonald's and he's really, he really doesn't care whether anybody enjoys their hamburger or not, or, you know, whether their fries are still hot or the soda's flat. He's just completely focused on his own needs and he needs to be here for the next 4 hours or whatever so that he can get a paycheck. Those guys have the hardest time making money of anybody that I know of, right? A step up from that is like other-centered labor, right? So at this point, we're starting to care about other people a little bit more. We do care if somebody gets a cold hamburger, right? And that is, you know, that's somebody that if they showed up late, they not only feel bad that they're not going to get paid, but they feel bad that they've put other people out, right? They've caused inconvenience to other people, right? And those people tend to have a much easier time making money than people that are self-centered. Easy to learn labor. Let's say that we're somewhat other-centered now. Easy to learn labor is going to pay you less for the amount of effort that you have to put in on a day-to-day basis than hard to learn labor. Obviously, a brain surgeon gets paid more than a guy that cooks hamburgers, but there's a reason for that. We're not going to go into all of the economic reasons for it, but take my word for it from now that you can make a lot of money if you just learn things that are hard to learn, right? And you don't have to be a genius, right? A genius might be able to learn something in 3 months and it's going to take you 18 months to learn the same thing. But once you've learned it, you have it and you can apply it and it's still hard to learn labor. And you're going to make a whole lot more money than before you learned it. So that's a great spot to be, right? There's a lot of people that become very wealthy and become millionaires just by doing that. And that is, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with being somebody that does easy to learn labor as well, right? If you're a single mother, there's all kinds of other circumstances that exist that make you a well-rounded person and that affect whether you're making wise decisions or not, beyond how big your bank account is. Right. So keep in mind that, you don't have to progress all the way to speculator, right, on this spectrum in order to be a smart, very wealthy, very important, very loving and kind person. Right. The next step up from that is somebody that starts a service business. Now it's still labor, right? Everything on this list besides speculator is all labor, right? But if you started a service business, if you started a landscaping business, you're probably not always, right? Like if you're a brain surgeon, you're going to make more than somebody that starts a business to do landscaping. So economists are always throwing in stuff like, well, all things being equal, right? And caveating it and things like that. But in general, right, as a general statement, if you start a service business, you're going to make more money than if you just learn hard to learn labor. Now, if you start a service business, let's say, for example, that you're a brain surgeon and you are subcontracted out to 15 or 20 hospitals and you're very specialized, you do a very specific type of surgery, you're probably, and you set up a business around that, you're probably going to be more wealthy than the surgeon that just works at a hospital, at a single hospital and basically just gets paid for his labor. That said, or just gets paid for the job of being a surgeon, right? Because the first guy is just a surgeon. The second guy is a surgeon that also is owns a business, right? And by owning and managing a business, that's not really speculation yet. It's just another category of labor. But chances are, in my experience, and the general trend seems to be that that guy's going to be better off. He's financially, right? He's going to make more money. The next step up is more of like a streamlined service business. So you'll notice that there's basically three different types of service businesses that I have on here. And in my experience, the more you progress and the closer you get to being a product business, in general, the more the more wealthy, or the easier it is to create wealth in that business. And the reason for that is basically just automation, right? So if you have a service business and you cut lawns, and then you streamline that, what would that look like? I don't know. Maybe you realize that you can outsource one or two specific tasks. Maybe edging you outsource to somebody else because it's the least profitable part of your business. And so you don't do that. You only do the other things, right? Or you streamline it and you become a landscape architect, right? Which just means instead of showing up and just cutting grass, you only design where the grass should be, right? So maybe that's a little bit more streamlined because you are neglecting certain tasks and focusing, right? If you wanted to take that to the next level, a productized service business is something like, it feels like as a consumer, it feels like a hybrid between buying a product and buying a service, right? Buying a service, you generally call up somebody and you say, hey, I have this problem. Can you perform this task for me or this set of tasks? And it feels somewhat custom, right? That's why there's sort of an automated effect to it when you become more of a product business. So if instead of having that sort of relationship, you have a relationship where somebody comes to your website, they provide you some information. You immediately, you know, you have some software that goes out and grabs a satellite image of the property. You have Google Maps set up. Maybe immediately a support ticket is opened once they make a deposit and somebody drives by the house and takes photos so that you have more high quality photos. And then that goes off to a department that creates three different versions of possible landscapes. You know, they're always the same sort of three major categories. It's presented to the customer, they select it, and then maybe all you do is outsource actual implementation to a landscape company. And then you have another support ticket that kicks off once they say that they're done to have somebody go out and take after photos, and then immediately, you know, an email goes out to the client asking for approval, and that's the whole process, right? That would be more of a productized service business. It has a product feel, even though ultimately it is a service that you're providing. The next step up would be a product business. So a typical progression here is let's use the software world for an example, right? When you first start out, you really have nothing to offer. You eventually learn some easy to learn skills, right? Like software testing, click around and say when something's broken. Eventually you can learn how to actually write code. Maybe at some point you create a consulting service, right? And as a consultant, you know, it's a service business. You go out and you write code for people. But over time, you productize that to a point where maybe you do integrations between only five or six different applications, right? SAP and HP's ProLiant, whatever, right? And you get it to the point where it's very streamlined. This is the point where you could actually step over into a product business, right? Or it would be natural to step over into a product business, where instead of doing these integrations, making these systems talk together, you would actually build an application that's already pre-set up after you install it to talk to all these different applications and make it work, right? So that would be an example of the way that you can progress to the product business sort of stage. Now, speculator is beyond that, right? And there's a reason that I have this laid out like this. The speculators that I know that are effective are experts. So they have a niche, they have a field. And after going through this entire process, they get to the point where they don't want to build products anymore. They want to help, let's say, build companies. But more directly, or more clearly, I should say, they want to buy pieces of companies. They don't want to manage a business. They don't want to, they've done it, they've been successful at it, so they can identify people that do manage a business well. But all they want to do is say, this stock is undervalued because I understand the problems that this business is solving. So I'm going to buy some, and I'm going to wait until it goes up, and then I'm going to sell it. So hopefully that's clear as to why it would be a natural progression to get to that point. So a lot of people, they think that they can just go from, you know, from basically the educational system and government has encouraged people to become speculators in all kinds of areas that they don't understand. And hopefully it'll become clear that that's not a good idea as the course progresses. Also, I said this a little bit, but this chart is to represent the fact that this is where most wealth is created, right? There's a lot of people that get their wealth in this sort of self-centered labor category, right? Out of the 400 million or so people in the United States, it wouldn't surprise me if 300 of them live, you know, right here, or maybe 100 million of them live here, 200 million of them live here, 75 million of them live here, and easy to learn labor. There's not a whole lot of people that make their money as speculators. Even people that you think of as entrepreneurs are probably not making their money as speculators. They're probably making their money doing labor, and it's somehow mislabeled, right? But there's not a whole lot of people that make their money on products, right? A lot of people make their money right down here in the somewhere between the easy to learn labor and the hard to learn labor categories, right? In this space. And that's fine. It means that they have to work harder to create wealth than they would if they were operating up here. But that is often a reasonable trade-off to accomplish the goals that people have in life. Just to wrap up what we're going to try to accomplish in this course, we're going to walk away with a foundational understanding of economics that's necessary for cryptocurrency investing and trading. And that is that requires that you understand what trade is, barter and price, right? That's the bottom brick on the diagram above. Really understanding what prices are, where they come from, why they matter. The next is money, right? Obviously, if you're investing in cryptocurrencies, it's a really good idea to understand what currencies are, what money is, right? What problems and what solutions have been tried over the years, and what are we looking at currently? And then finally, we're going to talk a lot about speculation, entrepreneurship, trading, and investing. So at the end of this course, when you have all of that, I believe that you guys will have what you need to be set up for success, at least to avoid 90% of the pitfalls that are out there.